Politics Matters with Eleanor Penny, general election coverage on FUBAR Radio.
I do think that Brexit is the biggest foreign policy blunder of the post-war period.
Well, you said can you allow me to finish? Do you mind?
Yeah, but I asked you a question and you're ignoring it.
No, I'm not ignoring the question. If you'd give me a minute, I'll answer it.
Come under a lot of pressure then to support Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister, because he will be promising a so-called people's
vote. Let me be incredibly clear about this. Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson, I do not believe are fit to be Prime Minister.
Body language throughout this evening has been so contemptuous of this House and of the people. And for the benefit of Hansard, the leader of the House has been spread across around three seats, lying out.
If you ask me why am I relatable, I don't, am I relatable? I've not the faintest idea. It seems to me the most difficult psychological question that anybody's ever asked me.
Good afternoon and welcome to hell. It's that Friday feeling of total and utter pitless, bottomless, yawning despair of waking up to five more potential years of a Conservative government whose one goal in office is to make my life as personally difficult as possible whilst incidentally also ransacking the country, leaving millions more kids starving, homeless, leaving millions more waiting for key surgeries, leaving millions more desperate and unsure of how they're going to keep a roof over their heads and pay their bills. So, congratulations to everyone feeling really bloody smug right now, because I blame you personally for this. When more kids will be scrimmaging through bins in their schools for just to get a basic meal, I am holding you personally responsible. And tell you what, when I saw the results last night, I was in the Navarra Media Studios, Navarra Towers Green Room, and I was with a friend and colleague named Dahlia Gabriel, and she clocked the results immediately when the screen panned up to Andrew Neil's face and then over to Laura Koonsberg, and she was like, they look happy. We fucked it. And lo and behold, she was right. So, I am here to offer a little pessimism of the intellect, and I hope a little bit of optimism of the will as well. We're going to be unpacking what the hell happened and what the hell we do about it now, because of course no one here is going to be rolling over nicely for the next 5 years, because they are far too important and far too many lives are actually on the line. Joining me to delve into the morass of general election 2019, we have Grace Campbell, who is a comedian and the scion of a rather famous father who I mention only because it is politically relevant these days. That is, of course, Alistair Campbell, formerly in Tony Blair's inner circle. And later, we will be having Lib Dem PC Charlie Hasted and Conservative candidate Sara Kumar. And we will also be having a couple of phoners. And if you do want to get involved, please tweet us and we can connect you. Because, frankly, I'm just a little bewildered this morning. I'm bewildered, I'm confused, and I'm quite fucking furious, quite frankly. And so I would love to talk to you. So come, bring me tales of hope. Bring me tales of rage. Bring me tales of fun from the outside world. So, Grace.
Hello.
How are you feeling this morning? Oh my God, it's the afternoon, isn't it?
It's the afternoon. What's the time? It's 3.
Jesus Christ.
It's nearly dark.
The Conservative government has already made me lose my grip on the fourth dimension.
Yeah, it does do that to you. I'm good. I did an event with Dahlia this week.
I met
her on Tuesday or Wednesday. Yeah, it was really fun. I'm good. I'm hungover. You know, I'm sad. I'm low. I'm looking at people on the streets and wondering how we got into the place that we are now. Mm. Last night, I actually was going from one place to another, and I was on the tube just after the exit poll came out, and I was on the Victoria line, and it was so busy, and I was looking at everyone and I was thinking, no one even looks like they know what's happened. Like, everyone on the tube was just like loads of really drunk, happy looking people, and I was like, have these people looked to see what's happened? Because, like, I just want to cry and I want to scream and I want to know if everyone else here is feeling the same way as me. it's a really horrible place to wake up in today for me and you, not for a lot of people in the country. And I guess that's what makes me even sadder, is that there is such a disconnect and there is such a divide in this country at the moment. And I will talk specifically about England, because the one silver lining for me is, you know, how well the SNP did last night. My whole family's Scottish. I have a massive connection with Scotland. And I do feel really frustrated for Scotland at the moment. So I am happy that they turned out in that to support not the Tories, you know, and show that they don't want Boris Johnson's Brexit and they do want independence.
And, of course, Northern Ireland, which,
yeah,
which
was very undercovered yesterday.
As is ever the case, right? Like, I don't know about you, but, like, in school, our education about the history of Ireland, not just Northern Ireland, which you would kind of expect even on a sort of small C conservative estimate to be like a part of the history of this thing that we call Great Britain and Northern Ireland. There was absolutely nothing. And it's such a key part of understanding the historical dynamics.
I know, they just take Northern Ireland for granted completely.
Yeah, and I'm... On one hand, I am very hopeful that the DUP no longer has that sort of the same stronghold that it has in Northern Ireland. And the DUP has been a deeply, deeply reactionary force in many people's lives. Even if you know taking out the question of whether or not you want to stay in the union, it's been a friend of mine described it as like as though the 17th century and the 18th century had a baby and then neglected it. Like it's that bad.
Yeah.
But also, of course, with Boris's Brexit deal, that very much risks reigniting horrible, horrible years of violence that people have lived through. And I am hopeful, but I'm also terrified for people that are, you know, I've got relatives living in Northern Ireland, and I'm scared on a personal level for them. It is very much, as you say, a kind of a question of Englishness and how the English have voted.
Yeah, it does make you wonder. And like, you know, one of the reasons that I'm here and I'm doing press at the moment is because I'm going on tour and I'm going around the UK in February and March. And actually, I'm not plugging my tour here, but what I'm really looking forward to actually leaving London, and it is something that I don't do enough. And when I do, like, my dad has a really strong connection with the north of England, and he goes to Burnley a lot, which is where... And Burnley last night switched to Tory. You know, the main Burnley seat, like, switched from Labour to Tory, and my dad is really shocked and upset about that. But, like, he has this massive connection with people up there, and he is... he's so much more aware of, like, what people are feeling outside of London, and I don't think I am. I don't think I'm as connected as I should be with other parts of the country. And I do think that is a big problem. And that's why, you know, I wake up this morning thinking, how has this happened? And it's because I don't really know any of the kinds of people that wanted Boris Johnson to win.
I think what we need to take account of is the fact that maybe it's not necessarily that there was this massive, overwhelming upswell of people who wanted Boris Johnson to win, right? Boris Johnson actually only increased the vote share on Theresa May's famous disaster by something like 1.7%. The real story here is how Labour and the sort of Remain coalition failed to kind of triangulate around a real deeply embedded sense of disaffection in some, you know, more traditionally Labour voting areas. Some traditionally Labour voting areas and constituency absolutely stayed with the Labour Party, and that vote actually got stronger, particularly amongst, say, like ethnic minorities. And that's a story that's
people.
Not and young people, of course. There's and that's very much linked to how youth has become a proxy for class in many ways, or just despair of, you know, the fact that the planet's burning. I saw a poll I think this morning that if 18 to 24 year olds vote, Labour would have voted alone. Labour would have got something like 600 seats, which is
but I guess, like, you know, there's so much wrong at the moment. Our voting system, I do think, being partly the biggest issue. As you said, it's not like Boris Johnson's vote went up significantly last night, but our voting system means that it was very easy for him to get a majority. Young people, a lot of people, I think, just don't think their vote matters, because in a lot of places it doesn't. And now we know from the result last night that it does matter, because in lots of seats where it swung from Labour to Tory, clearly a lot of people were turning out there. But I just think a lot of young people feel, because of the voting system, you know, if we had proportional representation, they would feel way more that their vote was going to really mean something.
I mean, I completely agree with you on the fact that there's clearly a deep need for electoral reform, and also just a deeper sense of democratisation in our society. Because, you know, what we've seen over the past 40, 50 years, certainly since the 70s, is a real hollowing out of the kinds of other institutions by which people would take control over their lives. Civil society institutions, unions, that kind of thing. So the idea that democracy wasn't something that just happened once every 5 years with you putting a tick in a box and then trusting someone in a suit hundreds of miles away to do something in your favour. It's about something that you do every day, and that's embedded in your life. But I do just want to push back on the idea that that more people turned out in seats that switched from
Labour to Conservative. No, I'm not saying that. I didn't say that. I'm saying a lot of people felt, not necessarily in safe seats, that their vote doesn't count, right? In safe seats. I'm saying in not safe seats, in marginal seats, your vote does count. But I live in a completely safe seat. So if I was someone that was a bit like, well, what's the point in me voting because I live in an extremely safe Labour seat? You know, like, that's more what I'm saying. And I think if we had proportional representation, you would feel like your vote matters so much more.
For sure. And I think what the interesting story there is also around the fact that Labour didn't mobilise its base in those key Leave areas. And I think a lot of people will be asking the question of, like, how... to what extent was this kind of triangulation and what was supposed to be a unifying strategy backed up with the kind of messaging that could cut through Boris's bluster? Because, you know, that simple lie set against the background of chaos of Boris's own making, quite frankly, is a much more, shall we say, sticky message than quite a complicated caveat filled thing about a second referendum with Remain on the ballot, plus we're going to negotiate a deal in all of these ways. And some people I've seen saying this morning is like, listen, there was a case for soft Brexit, and that's what Labour should have backed 2 years ago and kept backing it, because that's what happened in 2017, and that is one of the things that that might have saved us in this thing. I actually don't know if I agree. I don't know if I disagree.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think there are lots of different reasons why the Labour Party did appallingly. There are lots of different reasons for that. And the thing that I hate this morning is that everyone is now blaming different people on why Labour have done so badly. I just want... I want the Labour Party to put their hands up and be like, yeah, we did mess up in a few different ways, but we should stop this infighting, which is what we, on a public scale, are always known for. Like, the left is just constantly attacking each other. So, like, we wake up this morning and instead of being like, fuck, like, we've got to literally rise up now and fight what Boris Johnson will represent for the next 5 years. Instead, what we're doing is just attacking each other and putting different parts of blame on each other. There are lots of, for me, I think the Labour Party's policy on Brexit has been incredibly confusing and people just haven't been able to follow it. And when you do think this is one, unfortunately, this is one of the most important parts of this election, I do think that their policies just were, it's just been very back and forth, and I'm not quite sure what Jeremy Corbyn actually wanted at any point in the last 3.5 years. And then I do think that he, in many ways, is very unpopular in a lot of parts of the country. And I won't, like, when I say that to certain people, they just won't have it. And, like, that is my opinion. Like, that is my opinion. I do think that Jeremy Corbyn has been really turn-off-ish for a lot of people since he became the leader.
I think what I'm not here to, you know, to deny reality and pretend that Corbyn is an overwhelmingly popular leader, right? But I think what I'm interested in, kind of practically going forward, is to how we interrogate what made him unpopular and what were the engines of that, like what was in our control and what wasn't, because I think there are some things that that are just kind of givens, in that like anyone with a left-wing platform will get a terrible time in the media, but I don't think that's the whole story, and I think just pretending it like
no,
it's a
I
bit
think
of a
there are there are
out,
so
right?
many different elements to it, but what I'm saying is like I'm worried that that's not going to be properly interrogated. I know the media have given Corbyn a hard time since the moment that he became the leader, and they really treated him in so many ways totally unfairly. But I do think there was a lot about his leadership and his attitude towards leading the Labour Party that did not fill people with hope and confidence. I really do think that.
So we are going over to Angela on line one, who has been very patiently, angelically even, waiting. She is a...
Sorry, Angela.
Sorry, Angela. Hi. So she is a political activist and she lives in North Wales, which has been a very... very fascinating area to keep your eye on in this past 6 weeks. So, Angela, talk to me. How are you feeling this afternoon?
Devastated, yeah. And very angry with, well, frankly, people who I'm looking at in the village and seeing on Facebook thinking, I don't recognise you. Mm. You know, there's a lot of gloating going on. We returned a new replacement Tory MP with a bigger majority, and you know, looking at how people live around here, and you know, the levels of poverty, I'm devastated and confused.
So, I want to kind of dig into that confusion a bit, because I mean, a lot of people are going to be very sort of shocked and bewildered, because I don't know about you, but I didn't expect Labour to win. I just didn't expect us to lose this badly. So you're kind of talking to people, why do you think what do you think the appeal of the Conservatives is in your area?
Well, I suppose there's two points, and you've already been talking about one of them, which is it's not so much that they were voting for something, but there are many people who are voting against something. Mm. And that was the Labour Party's position on Brexit. It was ambiguous and confusing. The inability to deal with anti-Semitism, even though I had a conversation with a friend a couple of weeks ago, they didn't even know what it was, but they just thought it was bad. And, you know, there's a brush that has tarred Corbyn, whether it's a reality or the perception of his leadership. But going back to your point about what's the attraction, I think there's a lot of aspirational Tories in the area. My late mother, many years, voted Tory for Margaret Thatcher's government twice, and yet she was a cleaner in a hotel. And I always used to question them, Mum, why? Like, this doesn't make sense. But I think she always believed in the possibilities and sort of the promises made by the Tories that life would be better, and if you were able to better yourself and climb up the ladder, that you would be successful. And I do believe that, unfortunately, the Tories still represent that. It's a false hope, in my opinion. But people like to have that sense of hope.
I completely agree. And I also think that comes back to, you know, why the Leave vote won as well. People kind of want more for themselves, and they think that that's how they're going to get it. And I've always had this problem, and I guess as I get older, I'm trying to understand other people's opinions, understand where other people are coming from. And I think that you've just put it so well. That is why a lot of people voted Conservative. And instead of kind of like demonising them, we have to understand that is really what their logic has been. But I'm sorry that that's, you know, a lot of the people that you're surrounded by.
Yeah, you're really in enemy trenches, as it were. I don't mean that seriously, full disclaimer. But where I'm interested in triangulating a sense of I guess the hope, in appropriate scare quotes, that the Conservative Party offers is how I think to my eyes that not just the Labour Party, but left-wing liberal people more generally have really failed to head off arguments against migration. And I think making a positive case for migration, not just on economic terms, but on the basic principle of, like, these are people who are much more like you than the millionaires trying to flog you the lies that they're not, has really, really weakened, you know, our ability to go into Leave voting areas and plug the case for a non-disastrous Brexit that shows solidarity with people who, you know, aren't white and weren't born here, that kind of thing. Is that something that... Is the migration a live issue around you?
Well, what I would say, actually, is I think that, you know, the mainstream media have done a completely brilliant stitch-up on this, and it's very, very difficult to get around it. When you have a culture and a society which puts on a pedestal celebrities, footballers, you know, I don't know, Love Island, I don't watch that thing myself, but my son is obsessed with stuff on Instagram. So you're constantly seeing, you know, the rich, the wealthy, the people who are making money and frankly taking the piss out of the very people who are voting for them. They see them as sort of untouchable. When you come to immigration here in North Wales, frankly, it's the English who are immigrants where I live. I'm an immigrant in Wales. And, you know, when I talk, we haven't got anybody of colour in my village of about 1,200 people, nobody at all. So when I talk to them and they say, yes, but, you know, they're coming here and they're doing that, and I say, well, where? Where are they? How are they impacting on your life? Which school places are they taken here? They have no evidence because it doesn't happen, but it's the perception. And I really think, you know, programmes like, I remember having a conversation, Benefit Street on Channel 5, I think it was, a couple of years ago. People are still referring to the Romanians who live 15 to a room and then building mansions in Romania for their children and sending their benefits back. You can't escape that once it's in somebody's mind, and that's the image they've got. To dismantle that with facts and logic, yeah. I'm sorry, it doesn't work.
I think that's absolutely true, and that kind of the question of how we connect emotionally and tell stories that make sense to people's realities and tell stories better than the right and especially the far right do is going to be one of the key questions of the next 5 years. Angela, it has been absolutely lovely talking to you. I hope you have as good a day as is feasible in the circumstances.
Yes. Well, I need
sending
sleep,
you
actually.
Lots
I'll
of love and support.
Thank you. Yes, I need sleep. But we'll regroup. I'm not giving up hope because I believe the country's better than this.
Agreed.
And we will get there. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that was a beautiful, optimistic...
I loved her.
Yeah, what an absolute champion. And I think that is very much the sense that I'm getting from, you know, obviously my social media bubble. that is, you know, so clearly partisan. But nonetheless, I've been very much in touch with, you know, thousands and thousands of activists who have been out there stomping for... Labour all across the country. And yes, people are heartbroken at the moment and people are very, very sad, but there isn't that kind of demoralisation that you might expect. It's very much like you were saying, Grace, that the idea of like, right, okay, we know what we need to do. Like, the next 5 years needs to be a fight.
I know, but that's why I guess I really hope that the Labour Party, like, make some good decisions in the next few months, and I'm going to get involved in any way that I can and use the platform that I have and that the Pink Protest has, which is the like activist collective that I set up with my friends, because it just means so much right now. Like, realistically, the Tories are going to be in power for two more terms. Like, with a landslide majority this big, it's going to be very hard for us to win the next election. So we need to just regroup now and put all of our energy into finding a leader who is going to unify all of the broken parts of the Labour Party and, you know, bring back a lot of those people that swung to the Tories yesterday.
So what I'm curious about here is that, like, the possibility of picking a leader who would be able to, I guess, avoid the sort of pitfalls of Corbyn, especially his treatment amongst, like, other, you know, political constituencies and obviously media constituencies, as we've talked about, but who would be offering a platform that is capable of actually inspiring the same kind of groundswell support and the same kind of, you know, activists getting out on the doorstep, etc. Because, you know, I'm not here to defend the result of last night by any means. Jesus Christ, no. But the weird historical cul-de-sac that we've wandered down, does mean that Corbyn's actually, you know, gotten more votes than 2005 when it was a victory.
Yeah, but
more votes than 2015.
The problem is that, like, all of the support that you're talking about, and I agree that it is amazing, it does not translate into winning seats all over the country, which we've seen, you know. So I do think, as amazing as Corbyn has been in connecting with a lot of people over the country, and, as you say, a lot of activists, and getting a lot of people inspired to kind of get out on the streets and help him, it doesn't translate. You know, there is that missing piece in terms of him and his leadership. And I,
oh, yeah.
And I just, you know, I don't know who I think the next leader should be. I don't. There are a few people that I will support a lot, and there are a few people that I've worked with, and that, you know, I
have, who might that be?
Well, Jess Phillips. Right. I will if Jess Phillips puts her name in the hat, I will absolutely support her. She's been an amazing advocate of all of the women's issues stuff that we've been doing, and she's helped us so much in our campaigning. And, you know, she's not like a completely perfect politician, but I do think that she represents the kind of Labour that I believe in and that I stand for. Whether or not she can unite the party, that's something that we'll have to work out. But there are a lot of things about the inner workings of the Labour Party right now that kind of need to be sorted out, and will need to. It's just going to take quite a long time.
Here's the thing, right? Yes, there's an issue of leadership, right? But I think two things. One, we need to be very clear-eyed about the fact that the policies themselves consistently poll really highly, and not only that.
That's fine.
Not only that, but also the kinds of policies in their ambition and in their scale are the only things that, you know, are actually going to haul us out of crisis. Like, right, we can't be tinkering around the edges anymore. It's not going to work. But also, I think what I'm fascinated by, you know, sort of, and why I think we need to plunge back into the culture war, which we very much neglected in the past, you know, few years, and we've just been trying to do, like, let's just talk about bread and butter issues and then forget this whole roiling storm around us, is the fact that by challenging some really kind of fundamental emotional stories that, like, Britain tells about itself, Corbyn particularly was always going to have a really, really hard time, and we didn't strategize around that enough.
I just think a lot of people needed to own up to the fact that he was never going to be as successful as they thought he was going to be, and we saw that in the last election. I think he should have left after the last election. I think he should have done that. I think it was quite selfish of him to stay. I think he should have mentored someone else who had that, you know, all of what you're talking about, the amazing policies. The manifesto was incredible, absolutely incredible. But if he had someone else delivering that message, I really think we would have done a lot better yesterday. And I just think it was quite selfish of him not to leave then. And so I guess, like, yeah, what I'm trying to say is I completely agree, like, the place that the Labour Party has gone to in a lot of policies and their agenda is amazing. I do not think the leadership was up to the job, and I haven't thought that for a long time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think a lot of people agree with you, and I think what I'd be interested in doing is having a kind of national conversation about what leadership material means, and like what it means to be prime ministerial. Because in the last leadership debate, right, you know, I was kind of screaming at the TV, partly because I think one of my frustrations with Corbyn is that, you know, he's there to channel the anger and the sort of righteous outrage of, you know, millions of people who are getting absolutely shafted. And when, as a sort of performer, if you like, he's completely unable to land a punch. And I was like, Jez, yeah, what are you doing?
There were all of those elements missing about him. I just think, like, he's not got enough charisma. I don't think he has a sense of humour. I think he has too much integrity. That sounds really bad, but, like, look at Boris Johnson. When you are up against Boris Johnson, who is an awful, awful, awful man, who has absolutely no integrity, doesn't care whether he's lied 5 times in a sentence, he couldn't give a shit, right? Yeah. And Jeremy Corbyn next to him, he just looks like this really nice guy who, like, and this sounds terrible. I understand how bad that sounds, but sometimes I just really wish that people on the left got as dirty as people on the right.
I mean, I agree to a certain extent, right? Like, I want a fight, right? Like, I want a scrap. I'm very up for that, and it's definitely necessary. However, one of the things that just drives me to the edge of tears when I see this again and again and again, being like, you know, XYZ leader is not prime ministerial or is not sort of leadership quality. And we've seen, you know, this is not just Corbyn. We've seen this with many, many, many kind of politicians of, I guess, his political leanings, is that it seems to me like a lot of people, you know, not yourself, but when they talk about what leadership qualities mean, they're talking about being posh, and they're talking about class deference.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that.
I said that's why I was like, not yourself. Mm. But like, I think a lot of our media conversations around like what a good leader is about being an extremely masculine, extremely ruthless, extremely kind of playing to those colonial nostalgic tropes, and I just like, I'm so much more ambitious for our country than to have
I think you can not be like that and you can have charisma and you can hold a room, like 100%.
Sure, but I just think that there is the idea of just having charisma, being able to solve those kind of much more embedded cultural issues.
But that's not
issues.
What I'm saying. I've already said I think Labour's manifesto and Labour's policies were amazing. I think Corbyn really lacked that kind of personal thing about his character. He really just did, and that is what we saw yesterday. And I think you can have both. There are very few politicians who do, which is why I'm living in despair all the time, because I'm like, who can I trust? Who can I believe in? Who can I hope will actually get into power and change this country? And in other countries as well, you know, like we are hopeful in people and then they let us down a lot of the time. And a big thing, I did an event last night and we opened it up to the floor, and the main thing that every single person was talking about was trust. I just think we have such a lack of trust at the moment in politicians, in the media, in public figures, and you know, Corbyn has a lot of integrity, he does, so I'm kind of contradicting myself in a way, but I do think that there are politicians who can do both, and I think I just really wish Corbyn had kind of let someone else deliver the message.
Well, the next few months are going to be very interesting on that. And to talk to us more about the past day, the carnage therein, is Will. He's from London. Will, hello. How are you doing?
Hey, yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, that's
you sound pretty chirpy,
yeah, incredibly
Will.
Chipper. It's very nice to have that kind of cutting through the sort of morass of despair that is hovering over this recording studio. How did voting go for you?
Well, to be honest, I did vote. And I've had to sort of clarify this with my friends as well, where I think it's probably why I'm a bit sort of like not that depressed about it, where I kind of expected, I've kind of just given up, like in general, in terms of politics. And I actually spoiled my vote yesterday. So it's, I think for me, I think the place our country has gone to, it's sort of like, I have zero expectations in terms of things happening. I think in terms of, I'm usually a Labour voter, and I think my family's been Labour. I've voted Labour in the past, and I think it's gone to a point now where I have no expectations in terms of either party actually adhering to what they've actually put inside the manifestos. And I think that's a sentiment that's actually quite widespread. I don't think anyone actually trusts anyone to actually get anything delivered. And I think it's a shame for Jeremy Corbyn, because personally, I don't actually, I don't get the hate that Jeremy Corbyn has been getting recently. Not even recently. I think the media has sort of played him as a sort of a person who's like anti-Semitic and all these like different things. And like, I think like he's kind of unlucky in a sense where he's been put in at a time where there was such apathy for politics in general. Where even though he's a very hopeful character and I believe what he's saying, I think people don't trust politicians in general. Which is why I think he's in this position now where, you know, despite the things that he's saying, no one's actually fully believing that it's going to go through. And I think the messaging as well was a bit mixed. So there's a whole situation right now.
And did you not consider voting Labour, or was it just you didn't want to?
I didn't know what I was going to do up until I got into
right.
the and
what was it that sort of made you decide
honestly,
to spoil the ballot?
Honestly, I think I needed a way to sort of vent my frustration at the general political protest. And obviously in the UK, we don't have a way of voting now. There isn't really a way to sort of do that other than spoiling the paper. So for me, that was the only other option I could have done.
So what do you think it would take for you to start, I guess, reconnecting with the possibility of change? Because I mean, that's a story I've heard time and time again, you know, going out reporting and also doing canvassing on the doorstep. It's not that the like Labour's policies have been unpopular, it's like it's the sort of shriveling of our sense of collective political possibilities. It's like, can we really achieve change? Can we really trust these people to do what they say they're going to do? And that's not a story about even the past couple of years, that's a decades long story.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a difficult thing, but I think the first place which would make sense to start at is to just have consistent messaging. And I think the biggest problem that Labour had in this election was the messaging was all over the place. I mean, you look at the whole Brexit issue, the Conservatives were incredibly clear what they were offering. They were saying, you know, you know, vote for us and we will get Brexit done. And despite the fact that the number of times they said it got to the point where, like, it was starting to piss me off. Like, I'm guessing it pissed off a lot of people, but, like...
But it got into their heads.
Exactly. It was very, very...
Despite being an absolute lie. It's astonishing, isn't it?
But it was clear. Like, it was completely crystal clear.
Also...
I mean,
Sorry, carry on, Will.
Everyone knows that Boris Johnson is a liar. Like, he's specifically said things which people can disprove. And I think a lot of people know this, but their messaging was incredibly clear. And I think with Labour, the fact that they were saying, okay, yeah, we're for Brexit, as in, like, you know, we agree with the people that, you know, you voted for this, we should do it. But at the same time, we're going to, like, you know, come back and be like, oh, actually, we're going to propose that we come up with a... you know, proposal for Brexit, but then vote against it in, like, an actual, like, when it's an actual, like, vote for the people, like, we're actually going to go against it. Like, the messaging wasn't clear, and I think people caught on to that and just, you know, this is the reaction, I guess.
To add to that, I do completely agree, and I think, sorry that you might feel like I'm just really shitting on Corbyn here, but I am quite angry at him. And I do think his indecisiveness really shows to the public, and indecisiveness is not really a trait that you want.
It's not an innocent trait.
I think what I'm curious about, and I don't know the answer to this at all, so genuine question, what stance in Brexit would have not fucked us over? Because, like, the question is framed in such right-wing authoritarian terms, and especially the campaigns were run in a way that did kind of inculcate this... kick it, like, give the kick in authorities a kick in the teeth kind of opportunity sort of way, which definitely didn't help out sort of the cause of progressives, who definitely wouldn't align themselves with authorities. So in that context, like, I genuinely want to know, even for even in post-doc, even so I can just sleep at night, what the hell should we have done in order to avoid being torn apart from both sides?
Yeah, I honestly don't think there was an answer to this. I think the problem was a lot of people have voted for Brexit who are not going to be beneficial in any way in terms of the effects of Brexit. And I think this is a problem with the election, the referendum that we had in the first place. I think people have missed, even though, like, people know what we're voting for, I don't think people actually understand the full consequences of what's going to happen. And I think the thing that the Conservatives did really well was, although they were saying, okay, we don't know what's going to happen, there's sort of that hopeful message where it's sort of saying, okay, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but at least there's going to be some kind of change. And I think with Labour, the messaging that was coming out of it was just, we should go back to what we had before, we should... We should get rid of the referendum. We should go back to what we had. There was a whole frustration of Parliament. And I think that's not a hopeful message for people in those sort of, like, areas around the country which have had deprivation in the past. It's like,
I sort of disagree with you, but like, I realise that you know, I'm partisan here, but for me, this was very much something that I'd kind of pinned... and imagine a sense of my future on, because, you know, my entire adult life has been dominated by conservative politics, and for me that's very much the more of the same regression and also a slide into authoritarianism. So I do get this kind of, like, the idea of, like, a strong message appeals, especially when you have a kind of the chaos and a political morass surrounding you. But, like, I'm just sort of curious as to how Labour wasn't offering change in your eyes.
I think they should have just been very clear and just said, we want to go for leave, we're just going to stick it at that. I think there was, if you're going to try and play both sides, you're not going to appeal to anyone. You need to be, like, a strong opposition and say, again, we're going to be the opposite of what the government
I completely agree with that. And I think Corbyn saying that if there were a second referendum, he wouldn't campaign for either side. I just thought, people are just seeing that as you trying to get both people to then vote for you. You just have to pick a side in this. And the Tories were very clear, and he's just not been clear. They've not been clear at all in the last 3.5 years.
Yeah. I don't think they would have won
anyway,
a majority, but I think the distance in which they've lost, I think that could have been... It probably would have been a hung parliament, I think, or something close to that. I don't think we would have seen as bad a loss as we've seen today. if they had gone for that, okay, we're going to have an actual opposition here.
I think there's this sort of, I mean, there's kind of, for me, some conflicting messages, if you don't mind me saying, is that on the one hand, you have the idea that if the message was clear, it would have cut through some more. And on the other hand, you have the idea of, like, the messages kind of don't really matter because we have this total structural deficit of trust in our politics. I guess, how do we steer between the two horns of that?
Well, I guess I don't think people actually voted for the issues. I think people were just voting for Brexit. And I think in terms of the trust of politicians, I think that's referring mainly to the idea of, you know, the day-to-day sort of, like, everyday stuff. I don't think anyone was actually looking at the election in terms of those issues. I think it was just purely a Brexit thing. And obviously, you know, the Conservatives have been saying from day one, let's get Brexit done. Nobody actually knows what that means, but it's a very consistent message. So despite the fact that I don't know what they're going to deliver, I don't even think they know what they're going to deliver, the fact that they're saying they're going to do something about it rather than just say, okay, we're going to throw back and go through an elongated process, which is essentially what Labour was saying. They're basically saying, we're going to go through a whole another process to try to figure out what to do here.
I think we're going to have to leave you there, but thank you so much for talking to us. It's been a pleasure, and you have a brilliant rest of your day.
Thank you. Thanks, Will.
Yes.
So we have just coming up with us in the studio, Charlie Hasted. We'll be with them in a little bit. But before to, you know, for some little bit of inspiration, a little bit of re-energization to plunge you back into the fight that we're all facing over the next 10 years, let's go to Loki.
December 12th. Change the world. Sell the NHS, that's what Boris wants. He doesn't even have to lie, they just fob it off. They haven't got the honesty, but they got the bots. Policies that kill, they're not telling you the proper cost. More corporate violence, that's what Boris wants. Contracts for affairs, relationship was on and off. The robber boss won't even cover what your coffin costs. Policies that kill, we can't bring back what was lost. There's murdering, there's murmuring, there's churning grins harmful. Interrogating several ways a journalist can't do. Liar in the booth, a million examples. As trustworthy as the BBC is impartial. Another suicide note, she folded it in her purse. To another assessment, they told her she's fit to work. Death by a thousand cuts, this system, it isn't hers. Didn't receive a bit of dignity she did deserve. Vote for the nurses, Chagos, rough sleepers. Vote against the oligarchs, fossil fools, gun dealers. Vote for the musicians, sickest songs you sing along. Vote for the Yemeni children under British bombs. Vote for the libraries, childcare, youth centres. Vote for the truth tellers, not the fake news sellers. Something is rising, it isn't your salary. The only thing rising is the from mortality, a pig and a racist admits that he's shameless. Vote Corbyn, sure thing, glitch in the matrix. Vote against this oven ready, born to rule Trump puppet. Can't spell Pinocchio, they think we're just a dumb public. Cuts to the services, Conservatives control the news. Won't forget Grenfell, he's firing the voting booth. A tough and a sloth, nose full up a Charlie. Vote for those that cleaned up after the bullying and parties. And vote Corbyn,
chuck the government, chuck Boris.
Vote Corbyn,
chuck the government, chuck Boris.
Vote Corbyn,
chuck the government, chuck Boris.
Vote Corbyn.
Politics Matters with Eleanor Penny, general election coverage on Foobar Radio.
Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Eleanor Penny. I am joined in the studio by the delightful Charlie Hasted, and with us still we have comedian, auteur, actress, performer on the London stage, Grace Campbell. So, Charlie, how are you feeling today? Is that sort of the question I am asking all of my guests?
Personally, pretty good. I had a good result last night where I was. Doubled our vote share, kept my deposit. So I'm happy on that level. On the other hand, it was a bit shit.
Would you like to elaborate on that a little bit?
Utterly gutted about Joe. Utterly gutted.
Mm. Of course, we are talking here about the fact that... Joe Swinson, who, you know, cards on the table, we're probably going to disagree with this. I'm not her biggest fan whatsoever, but she was one of the biggest names to lose her seat last night.
Yeah.
So was that a massive shock? Like, did anyone prepare for that?
We knew it was a possibility. We were hoping we'd manage to do enough to stop it, but 150 votes in it. It's one of those things where I didn't agree with everything she did in the coalition, but by God, she was one of the biggest advocates for trans rights in Parliament. So, as a trans person, losing her is absolutely gutting for me.
That was, it's funny, a couple of days before the election, because, I mean, I, you know, as I'm sure, like, demographically speaking, everyone here has been hit by the cuts pretty hard. So, and that's the lens through which I inevitably see her politics. But she, you know, she absolutely has to be given credit for being unapologetic in her defence of trans rights, and that is extremely unusual in top level politicians, including very sadly top level politicians in the Labour Party. And that is definitely a frontier that needs to be battled for in the next few years.
The fact we have no trans MPs, and by the looks of things, we ain't getting any for a while, is ridiculous. So we needed our allies in Parliament, and we've lost a lot of them.
But I guess pivoting to the idea of the Lib Dems more generally, for me, it strikes me that there must be a lot of kind of like mourning and, you know, self-examination in the ranks of the Liberal Democrats as well as the ranks of the Labour Party, because yes, you know, obviously there are many questions to be asked of the Labour Party as the main opposition, but you do have key seats like Kensington, where a former Conservative until recently, Sam Giemer, ran a stonkingly dishonest campaign against Emma Dent Code, and that seat, he increased his vote share by thousands and delivered a seat to the Conservatives by 150 votes. And for me, particularly in light of Grenfell, that is so gutting and devastating.
I'm not going to lie, if Labour hadn't spent an awful lot of time trying to poke Chuckarumuna and Luciana Berger in the eye, if they'd bust half the activists into Kensington that they did to Cities and to Finchley, they'd have taken Kensington.
Why do you say that?
Literally, if you look online, there's so many activists, so many people were bussed in by Momentum, by Labour, to basically punish Chuka and Luciana for daring to leave.
You're saying if they'd have used that energy in Kensington,
if they'd run a low campaign in Wimbledon, we'd have four less Conservative MPs.
I mean,
we'd have three more Lib Dems. We'd have at least one more Labour.
So first of all, like, this is not about punishing, right? Like, I was there campaigning on the ground in Kensington, and everyone there, like, you know, people that don't agree with the Liberal Democrats, but this isn't really not a personal thing against Luciana or against Chuka, you know, certainly not on my part, because it's just like there's so much, there's a world to win. The question is so much bigger than whether or not we particularly dislike this one former MP, and I think that's kind of disingenuous, actually, because the Liberal Democrat campaign was so dishonest in Kensington and in many other constituencies, like Chipping Barnet.
But then so was Labour's in other places.
How was it dishonest?
There was just constant, like, there's no anti-Semitism in Labour. There's anti-Semitism in every single party. No party gets a pass on saying we have no anti-Semitism, we have
Labour,
no racism.
Labour never said there is no anti-Semitism this party.
I think we've been watching very different media then, because I've seen it all over. I've seen it all over Twitter, all over Facebook, everything. And, like, I spent 10 years working in the US, so I have a lot of Labour friends. The vast majority of my friends are Labour friends, and I've seen so many people go, there's no anti-Semitism in Labour, there's no... It's a lie. Of course there's anti-Semitism. Like I said,
mean, I completely agree with you. I give workshops on anti-Semitism awareness training, and I am absolutely aware of that, you know, there is endemic anti-Semitism across our society and in the Labour Party as well, and that manifests in particular ways in the Labour Party. And there is a handful of people who have these absolutely vile views that need to be routed out. Thankfully, the leadership have, you know, been forcibly made aware that this is an urgent frontier. But like, honestly, the frustration I feel this morning when I see people like Michael Gove, who has sided publicly with Viktor Orban, saying that this is a good day for Jewish people, he can quite frankly go fuck himself, because I am terrified of the authoritarian forces that his government is currently in bed with. Tommy Robinson today joined the Conservative Party. Katie Hopkins is fucking jubilant, and that's all we need to know.
I think we can all agree.
Yeah,
fuck the Tories.
Yeah, that's definitely not even to be debated.
I think we can all agree on that.
The legitimate racism in the Tory party is so bad, and Boris Johnson has legitimised.
Would you see Katie Hopkins' tweet? So Saida Wasi put out a tweet about dealing with Islamophobia in the Tory party. Mm-hmm. Katie Hopkins has come back with that British people first, we have a nationalist party again.
Oh, so it's fascism. Great.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we had the choice between socialism or barbarism, and like millions of people were like, maybe barbarism now.
But
yeah,
you know,
I know, right?
It doesn't surprise me. Like, the world has been turning this way, and you just have to look at America. And what's really worried me with this election is it's made me think Trump's going to win the next one. Because I don't think the kinds of people that are pleased with what's happening are done yet.
The UK and the States seems to be in a perpetual state of hold my beer at the moment.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
I think when we look at sort of the comparisons to Trump, not just on coiffure and general sort of like personal awfulness, but the shape that the campaign has taken and its sort of key motors. The reminiscences of 2016 really kicked in. I've been resisting them, but I really kicked in yesterday and the evening before when I saw all of these celebrity endorsements coming in, and I went, "Oh Christ! Oh shit! It's happening again!" Because there was precisely that disconnect. Because you know, people, honestly, you know, celebrity endorsements are useful in certain cases, but when it's completely disconnected from the reality of a total hollowing out of left-wing institutions by both, you know, from Thatcher onwards through New Labour, unfortunately, we, like, Dua Lipa is not enough. Dua Lipa is not enough. Dua Lipa.
I went to school with her.
Oh, I mean,
this is in my Edinburgh show.
I mean, tell her thank you very much for her contribution,
enough. Yeah, but as you said earlier, the young vote wasn't the vote that needed swinging. You know, Dua Lipa's followers probably already were going to vote Labour. It's the people who aren't.
Vote.
The turnout was good.
Yeah.
I don't like that notion when we always like put young people down, but it's the people that we really needed to swing are the people that aren't on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
They aren't on Instagram. So Dua Lipa's endorsement doesn't mean anything to them.
And another kind of another echo is, of course, how we've seen over the past 6 weeks a continual sort of outrage, not enough actually, not coupled with enough genuine scrutiny and accountability, but certainly sort of a sense of monocles popping over Boris lying, Boris being sort of, how should I say, uncouth, Boris doing all these racist gaffes and trying to run circles around Parliament and around the media. I'm like, these aren't gaffes for him. These aren't accidents. This is a part of a strategy that's specifically designed to pose himself as a strongman authoritarian to appeal to a kind of far-right sentiment of, like, the state is failing, democracy is failing, we need a strong man to come in and, like, you know, knock heads together. And it's like, this, again, it's horrible, horrible flashbacks to 2016.
Like, the problem is that when people expect the Tories to lie, so nobody's surprised when it happens.
Mm.
Like, the Tories can lie and lie and lie, and everyone goes, well, it's just the Tory party, and it doesn't affect their ratings anymore.
But, You know, I don't mean to give you personally a hard time, because, like, this is not necessarily about, you know, like, your platform specifically. Yeah. But I'm interested as to how you analyse the fact that I know a lot of people my age who have been, you know, turned off politics and turned off the sense of political possibility precisely by, A, the effects of austerity and the damaging effect that those have had on the social sphere, and, B, that kind of key historical betrayal of the student vote by the Liberal Democrats. Like, how does the Liberal Democrats push forward a progressive politics in the situation that, you know, these things that they've supported have created? Like, that seems pretty hard to me.
Well, how did Labour do it? Like, Labour introduced tuition fees in 98 when they said they weren't going to. Labour tripled tuition fees in 2001 when they said they weren't going to. Yeah. They've apparently moved past that. Nobody blames them for that anymore.
Oh, I mean, I do. So, like, no, but, well, yeah, no, like,
but no, but nobody's going, I can't possibly vote Labour because tuition fees.
But okay, so I think one of the differences,
there's got to be a space to move past it eventually. Eventually, you have to just kind of go, okay, it was shit. I'm not gonna lie, I was at Milbank. Like,
yeah,
I got whacked by the Riot Squad.
It was actually the forming of the coalition government that really affected a lot of people. I think, obviously, politicians say they're going to do stuff and then fucking don't do it all the time. We've seen that time after time. But it was that the Lib Dems have a track record of saying they weren't going to have form a coalition with the Tory party. And so I guess this time
around... And it's the same people. It's like the same people who did it.
We didn't say we weren't going to go into coalition. What we did say was, no more broken promises. We're going to keep our promises. How did that go? I'm not going to lie. Whoever was advising Nick Clegg on that one, idiot.
Where are the consequences, right? I'm just like, okay, so where are the consequences for the architects of this? Like, where are the consequences for, you know, Tony Blair, who I absolutely do hold responsible for a lot of the kind of public disaffection from the possibility of change and the possibility of... possibility of democracy, right? Like, where are the consequences for Boris Johnson when he drags the names of, like, Muslim people and Jewish people and travellers and Romanis through the mud? That's what I feel today. I feel there that sense of rage.
Yeah, but that's what he's being rewarded.
The problem is that the people who are voting for him don't care. About those
they just
people.
Don't care. And that's what I think we just need to really own up to. And, like, you know, we can sit here for so long and talk about, like, the awful track history of the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats.
Yep.
But the Conservative Party was voted in yesterday by millions of people who just couldn't give a shit. Yeah. And we need to really... And that's what I guess, you know, when I was saying earlier, which is that I sometimes just wish that we had a bit less integrity.
I'm not sure that people don't give a shit. I think people... I have spoken to a lot of people who are voting Tory who are... very concerned about things like child poverty and the NHS, but that connection isn't made to the sense of, like, this can change and this is how you do it. And restoring those links is going to take a lot of bloody work.
Yeah, definitely in it for the long haul. But, like, I think a lot of the difference is that the reason why anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, or, you know, racism in this and la la la, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, the anti-Semitism we've had historically in the Lib Dems with Jenny Tong, David Ward, the difference between us and the Tory party is we care. Labour and the Lib Dems, we care about people that are already on the margins of society, who are already oppressed. Well, Tories, to a large part, don't.
Well, that is both an inspiring and a very depressing way to wrap up.
Yeah.
Grace, I want to, I want you to tell the people.
Yeah, I've only got 2 minutes.
Show coming up.
I don't know how I'm going to do that in 2 minutes.
Well, you're going to do it amazingly.
No. Well, my dad is Alistair Campbell, so that's number one. I grew up in politics. My dad started working for Tony Blair when I was 3 weeks old. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I've just done my debut Edinburgh show, and it's called Why I'm Never Going Into Politics, and it's essentially a rejection of Westminster because, you know, I grew up in it, and it's like anything that your parents do. I've been constantly asked my whole life, will you go into politics, will you be a politician? And it's kind of me just giving my 2 cents. I'm gonna have to rewrite the show a lot given what's happened in the last 6 weeks. Got to talk about Dua Lipa endorsing the Labour Party, but it's also kind of like I'm a massive, like, crude, outspoken feminist. I talk about sex a lot. I talk about my vagina. It definitely turned off a lot of the old folks in Edinburgh. That's the show. It'll be fresh. So if you've already seen it, I would advise you to come back because it will be a kind of new rebooted version. Yeah. And it was a real success at the Fringe.
Fabulous. Well, I'm looking forward to getting down there myself and maybe taking in some inspiration and leaving politics for good.
Mm-hmm.
Behind me.
Changing the world in other ways.
Exactly. Right, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you both on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Grace Campbell and Charlie Hasted. You have a lovely rest of the day, and the same thing to our beautiful listeners. I've been your host, Eleanor Penny. This has been Politics Matters, and join us again possibly in the new year.